That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to the Price of Football podcast with me, Kevin Day, and football's effing Rayman, Kieran Maguire. Sitting over, how are you, Kieran?
I'm very good, thank you, Kevin.
Good. I like the fact that you're happy with being described as football's effing financial Rayman, but it brings a smile to your face, isn't it?
Well, compared to what some of my students call me, it's actually an improvement.
Yeah. It is essentially what you are, though, because you are the leading. I think you're the country's leading expert in exposing financial irregularities in football, and that's not a bad thing to be, is it?
Yeah, I think I'm in a pool of one, so
I'm
also there for the worst.
Well, you're still the best.
Yes, yes.
It's Monday, so it's question day. Some good questions are coming up. We've got a question that Ian Holloway buys into Grimsby. Is it better not to own your own stadium, which is an issue that came up in the last pod? And how much does winning the Euros get you if... God forbid England do, wouldn't it? That would be great. Now, first question. And again, it's probably based on the discussion we had about Berry in the last pod, who's just faced another winding up order. This is from Rose of the Rovers. It's R-H-O-S. I'm presuming there's some kind of Welsh connection there. But Rose of the Rovers, thank you for your question, Rose. Rose basically wants to know, is it some clubs repeatedly seem to appear in court to be wound up, yet have their cases adjourned time after time? Is there a reason for that?
Yes, there is. What will happen is that normally it's HMRC that are applying for a winding up order for non-payment of taxes.
Not always, as we saw in Morecambe, so the players and the ex-manager were...
Yeah, that was Macclesfield.
Macclesfield. Yep. Beg your pardon, sorry.
But Morecambe have also had issues of this nature. Yep. Southend. There's been a lot of clubs who have ended up normally with wage-related or unpaid bills.
Yep.
What tends to happen is that the owner of the club will see whether HMRC back down, and if they don't, they will then go to the court and say, I've just written out a cheque, here it is. And then the same cycle will occur again and again. Now, part of that is actually due to the way that clubs receive money. Because if you are a football club, you're getting money from season ticket holders, match day people, TV money, and your commercial sponsors. That money is not arriving evenly throughout the year. So if you listen to, I think actually it was David Gold or David, it was David Sullivan at West Ham. They said they get 75% of their total income from the year by the end of July. So Sky and BT, they pay an awful lot of money up front. The sponsors pay the money up front. Because the sponsors and the TV companies, they want to fund the transfer market. Give the clubs the cash, they'll go out and spend it.
Of course. That never occurred to me.
Season ticket holders, again, where when do you think about when do you pay for your season ticket? Yeah, I got my reminder this week.
Right.
So yeah, I've got to pay by the 15th of March if I want a season ticket. So clubs are getting their money early. And that means if they've got bills, especially tax bills, which you have to pay your tax on a monthly basis for HMRC, for your PAYE and NRC, then that if that comes in November or January, the only money you've got coming in is match day tickets, which can be relatively small income. So if you don't pay that and you kick it along the road for a couple of months, you end up in court, but by then you've got some money from the January transfer window, or you've got another instalment from Sky or something like that, and you use that to pay your bills.
So you're telling me that on a much higher level, these clubs are having the same sort of problems I have, basically.
Because
being freelance, money comes in at different times. But surely HMRC know then that even a club halfway down League Two, they know there is a certain commitment for them to be paid for TV money for EF. So doesn't that not help MRC to relax a little bit so we know they're getting money in?
Well, the trouble is, if you don't apply for a winding up order, the chances are the club will go and pay another one of its creditors. So HMRC, you know, ultimately, they're looking after our interests as much as anybody else. We're all taxpayers. And therefore, they feel duty-bound to not treat football clubs preferentially to other industries. Because if that was the case, they'd have MPs screaming at them at the first opportunity.
Well, that's interesting. Is there a legal hierarchy then? If you're having financial trouble, do you have to pay HMRC first, tax VAT, or do every creditor has an equal right to the money they're owed?
It's a bit like... What we will have in terms of our personal debts. The bank comes first because they've got a mortgage. So that's what's called a preferential or a secured creditor. And then everybody else is in a pool. Now, those rules are actually changing from the 1st of April 2020. HMRC are moving slightly up the pecking order, so they will have a more preferential position. How they're going to react to that, because they will now have the knowledge that if the club goes into receivership, they're going to get more money than Joe Schmuck, who's supplying the club with pies or transport or whatever. And as a consequence, they might take a slightly more relaxed view, but I suspect not.
HMRC's attitude interests me, being on the personal end of it for quite some years. Not every year, I have to say. That's all down to my own idiocy with money. But I hear what you're saying about them being reluctant to treat football clubs like any other business, but also surely there must be a reluctance amongst HMRC to see a club wound up. Surely they must be aware that it is a slightly different circumstance and that there's no real mileage for them to be the reason that a club disappears.
They have no moral compass when it comes to this, because there's lots of seasonal businesses. If you think, if you're operating in a seaside town, you get 80% of your income over 4 months. And then the danger is, from HMRC's perspective, if the club does go bust, then they're an unsecured creditor and they can end up with 3 pence in the pound. If they could have got 20 pence in the pound from applying for a winding up order themselves 3 months earlier, somebody's job's on the line at the tax authorities. And therefore, they are operating in the best interests of the taxpayer.
Now, this is a very good question. It's from David Kirk. Grimsby just appointed Ian Holloway as manager, and he has bought £100,000 worth of shares in the club. Now, David raises a very interesting question. Does that change the dynamic or blur the relationship between the chairman and the manager?
I think it's a very magnanimous gesture by Ian Holloway. I'm a huge fan of his. I think given what he does in his personal circumstances, I've got nothing but admiration for the guy. I think this is him, to a certain extent, saying, I've been out of football for a while. Thanks for showing an investment in me. I'm going to repay that. Grimsby, in total, have 2.3 million shares. So if he's bought 100,000 shares, he becomes a very minority shareholder.
Oh, no, so I said £100,000 worth of shares. So that might be different to 100,000 shares. He's bought 100,000 shares.
I think he's bought £1 shares. Yeah.
Is there any chance that this would have been part of his deal, that when they approached him to be manager, he would say, yes, fine, but I'd quite like some of it to be in shares? Or do you think this is a separate investment on his part?
Well, remember, he's buying into the club.
Yeah.
So, you know, a manager wouldn't normally do that. A normal relationship is that you're an employee. I think what perhaps he's sold to the club is that I want to have more than just a standard relationship. And as a shareholder, I potentially can share in the benefits of the club should it ever make money. Now, I don't know whether you're aware, but Grimsby are trying to move their stadium. Mm. So they're trying to move away from Blundell Park to somewhere out of town. Blundell Park could therefore be sold. It is actually quite central in Grimsby.
It's in Cleethorpes, but...
Yeah. I'd won the greatest nights of my life in
really?
Grimsby. Oh, yes. It was.
Well, I've heard about several of the great nights in your life. So if Grimsby tops them, I'm going to have to... Let's crack on with the rest of the pod and you can tell me in private. That, but in terms of that, now, that's fine if Grimsby do well. But David Kerr, I think, is implying, no, what happens if Grimsby struggle under Ian Holloway? How do they sack him?
Well, they sack him because ultimately he's an employee and the decision is made by the board of directors. Right. So therefore, that particular relationship won't be impacted. I think from his point of view, he's unlikely to get his money back unless Grimsby are spectacularly successful. So I think it's a good gesture of his to put money into the football club. He's unlikely to get it back because if he leaves, who's going to buy the shares off him, given that the other director or the directors and the club owner, they don't need to buy those shares. They can simply say to Ian, sorry, mate, you know, they're yours for life. You can stick the certificate up on your toilet wall.
And he hasn't got enough shares to influence club policy on anything then?
Not with 100,000, no. It puts him at, you know, a low singles percentage. So it appears to be, I want to show that I'm more invested in this club than a normal manager.
Which is good, because it will buy him time with fans as well. I mean, fans will like that as a gesture, I presume, wouldn't they? This guy sees a future in us, so we'll get behind him. So it might even buy him 6 extra months. The directors might think, oh, we can't get rid of this guy, he's popular.
Yeah, I think it could. I mean, you normally make an investment on a long-term basis. Mm. So I think he sees this as an opportunity to commit himself, and he'll be looking for some form of commitment coming back the other way.
Well, I think that's a story we'll come back to, is my instinct. But you'll like this next question because it's a proper accounting question. This is from Jonathan Tor. I'll be back when you've finished answering it. Jonathan Tor is a Huddersfield fan. Now, Jonathan says at the start of the season, the owners of Huddersfield told the fans that when you sell a player, you're required to pay tax to HMRC, as we've been discussing, on the sale. And now, Jonathan, is that not odd? Because surely you pay tax on profits rather than on one individual deal, didn't you?
Yeah. So what we need to do is to separate it out. Any profit they make, they will pay tax on when they do their annual tax return. Yeah, we've just done our annual tax returns 31st of January, and you had to go and pay.
Have we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, I'll just make a note of that.
So therefore, you've paid money across to HMRC. It's exactly the same for a football club. What's different is that when you sell a player's registration, there is VAT on that.
Oh, okay.
And you pay VAT on a quarterly basis. Now, the complication is that if you're Huddersfield Town, let's say that you've just sold a player for £20 million to a Premier League club, the Premier League club say, right, £20 million, 20% of that is VAT, so 20 of 20, that's £4 million. And then the Premier League club says, we're going to pay you in instalments. So we're going to pay you £5 million over the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is, from the selling club's point of view, is that you've got to pay the VAT immediately.
Okay.
So you get your first instalment on the sale of the player, £5 million, and you've got to go and pay £4 million to the government in VAT straight away. So you've got what's commonly known as bog all to actually reinvest in the transfer market. So that's the story which is coming from the Huddersfield owners. We've sold a couple of players. Why has it not been reinvested? Because it's all gone to HMRC for VAT.
I see. Okay. The mere concept of VAT baffles me completely, because I charge somebody VAT. They pay me VAT. I pay that to the HMRC. It's the same money going. I don't understand. Why do we not even bother to do that? Because it's the same money going round and round and round, isn't it?
Well, it's not. It's the ultimate purchaser who bears VAT. I used to teach tax, by the way.
Really? In between nights out in Grimsby and running nightclubs in Blackpool, etc.
it's the final person in the chain that pays. So normally, you or I, when we go out for a meal, when we buy a theatre ticket, we're actually paying for the VAT on that, and the VAT that we give to the theatre company or the football club, they pass on our behalf to HMRC.
Yeah, I still don't get it.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Russell Earl, now this is something we touched on in the previous pod when we were talking about Walsall. I mean, Russell's question is, in the longer term, is it better for a club to own its stadium or to pay rent to the council? Now, he's a concerned Oldham fan. Oldham are in a similar situation to Walsall. He says, that might explain why the owner is running it in the way he is, which some Oldham fans would call into the ground, basically. So, are there benefits to renting a stadium?
It's the same. It's no different to the position you have in respect of a house. If the rent is cheap, then you're better off as a tenant. If the rent is expensive, I think what you've got to say is, well, what benefits are you getting from paying that high degree of rent? So I think a classic case would be those clubs which rent their stadium, but they're not allowed to use it for any other purpose. So if we take a look at Coventry City at the Rico, they were the tenants of Wasps. So it meant that Coventry paid a rental for 25 matches a year, and they couldn't use the stadium for any other purpose because Wasps said, we're taking all the hospitality money, we're doing all the commercial developments as far as the stadium is concerned, we're even taking all the money on match days from the sale of pints and pies and so on. So you've got to look at the small print, sadly, to see whether you're better or worse off.
And that won't be better for Coventry at St Andrews now either, will it, presumably?
The people that own St Andrews, Birmingham City's Hong Kong-owned holding company, they were in such a strong position when negotiating that deal that they will have had Coventry City over a barrel.
It's depressing, isn't it? That really is depressing. In that case, let's end with a more upbeat question from Daddy Daycare. We all love to look after our own kids from time to time. Let's not brag about it, Daddy. Daddy Daycare. Daddy's going to assume that England win the Euros. I like that. That's the sort of optimism we need. So how much will the FA get if England do win the Euros? And how much will we make from part hosting them? With the final and one of the semi-finals will be at Wembley. Is it lucrative?
It's not that lucrative. If you take a look at the 2018 World Cup, France made $38 million from winning the World Cup.
Dollars? Why dollars?
Because FIFA work in dollars.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
That's the way that they distribute their money. Okay. So England finished fourth and they got $22 million. Now, if you think about it, you've got to pay the players out of that. You've got to pay for your accommodation out of that. I mean, they were given some other money, a few other bits and pieces. But it's not particularly lucrative. The players' pool will take an awful lot of that. The manager will need paying, all the coaching staff. You've got the transport to and from the ground. So $38 million for a national FA isn't a huge amount of money. Yeah, that wouldn't even buy you a fullback for an elite club these days, would it?
Can we just go back over something? There would be a lot of older fans listening to this who'd be intrigued by you've got to pay the players. Is that different to the player? Because in the old days, you didn't get paid for playing for your country, but there was the players' pool, as you describe it, which sort of TV money was all thrown in together and they split it, is so players are actually paid now to play for England.
They are paid to play for England, though I think you've got to give the players credit, and somebody probably can confirm this, is actually what the players tend to do is that they put that money into some of the players' charities and that gets distributed.
Okay, good.
But in terms of does the FA make a huge amount of money out of it, they will make the money not from FIFA itself, I don't think, significantly, but they will make the money from all of their sponsors and partners because there will be bonuses for how you progress through the competition.
Okay, now what about making money from actually hosting it? Like I say, the final is going to be at Wembley. One of the semi-finals is at Wembley. It's a strange tournament this year because the group stages are all over the place. But if it's say England was hosting the whole tournament, as in 96, how much money would the FA get for hosting the tournament?
You pitch in to pay a hosting fee.
So
that's what the FA have done with regards to Euro 2020. And then you get a share of the gate receipts. Now, having bought tickets myself, so I'm going to see England play the Czech Republic. You know, the price of tickets is £150 for a ticket. This is for group games.
Yeah.
You know, it's similar. I'm going to Dublin to see a game there as well.
Yeah, but you'll be in top class, full bifters lounges, I imagine, wouldn't you?
No. That's just for tickets alongside the halfway line.
Jason. No.
Yeah.
£150
It was something extortionate.
For a group game?
For a group game.
I think the eyebrows are getting the workout.
I know. I think the tickets behind the goals are cheaper, which they traditionally are at matches. But
they're going to be £100 though. If you're paying £150,
they are pretty pricey. I think perhaps we'll go through.
I'd like to do that.
How much it's going to cost a fan? Because I know I'm not plugging the book here. But I researched for the book how much it costs somebody to watch England win the 1966 World Cup, and I think you could do it for something like £2.65 to see every game that England played all the way through. And now, even taking into account inflation, I think that works out as £65 today. And well, you know how much it costs.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we'll add that to the list of specials in international football. We'll add that to the, speaking of which, Scotland, it is happening. We're in negotiations with the head of the SPL, so that's definitely happening in Scotland. That's incredible. So I assume, like many people do, that the UEFA would have looked at the size of the various countries involved and divvied out the games accordingly. But essentially, those who bid the most. So if the Slovakian FA had bid more than the English FA, we'd be playing games.
Yeah, I think there's some matches in Azerbaijan.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not a particularly lucrative place, but you think that the Euro League final last year, that took place there. So it's how much money you bid to, and it's the same in cricket, actually, for test matches.
Do you know, it just shows how hopelessly naive I am, because I genuinely thought that was UEFA's way of saying, look, you know, these countries need, they're part of UEFA as well, we need to play some games there, but no, it's money.
No, that's why both semi-finals and the final are taking place at Wembley, because the English FA bid the most.
So we're 14 pods in, I still haven't got the hang of football finances. This is why we're doing it. I'm genuinely astonished about that. Thank you for all your questions again this week. We couldn't do our Monday special about questions without the questions. Price of Football is Adaptive production, as ever. If you want to leave us a review, do so where you listen to the podcast, and that will help the algorithms, and we'll have an algorithm special coming up as well. Kieran, thank you. See you next time.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.